PFT Media.
The lighthouse keeper is keeping watch for the Carolinas right now. So I have taken over. Pedro is on Carolina watch right now because he works for the power company.
Yes.
So.
And a storm is coming. Or came. It's over. It's done.
Yep.
Hope you're fine.
Here we are.
So with the big dog out, we're going to try and pick up the pieces as best we can here. I am your host, Dan Perella, along, of course, with my fellow co-host, Clara Sinclair.
Hello. I'm here too.
And joining us on Third Mic tonight, a good friend of mine, long time now, 8 years, I think, we've been friends.
Yep.
Another wrestler that we have brought in here, Mike Monroe.
Do you actually know any other people at this point?
Other comedians when I did stand-up comedy.
So teachers? You know some teachers.
I know teachers, comedians, and wrestlers.
I'm so sorry.
That's a wonderful dinner party if you ask me.
Fantastic.
I'm totally just like pressed the little thingy on my chair.
Yeah, you lowered your chair. You want it to go back up?
Hang on.
You got to stand up.
It's on those Pedro settings, so it's already low to the ground.
Yeah, the Pedro setting is practically on the floor.
I've sorted it. Okay, we're good now.
All right.
So
you probably should have done that before we started the show. That's right.
Well, I didn't mean to. I was just fiddling.
No, but it's brilliant. You're good. Get comfortable. We're going to be here for a minute.
Yeah. Our fearless leader, as we said before, manning the power lines of Carolina. Hopefully he does quite well. This is for you. And of course, these are all pre-recorded, so
yes.
You will he will be done with his job by the time you hear this.
Yeah, he's already complaining about it, and it's over. Facebook posts are done. Yeah. Check him out on Instagram at Rican Gorilla.
There you go. Mike, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm just watching you guys. It's fun.
Front row seat?
Yeah. I can't see past the front of my face because there's a microphone, but it's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to get used to this.
It's built for audio, not necessarily for...
It's okay.
So, Pedro does the opening banter so well. I don't even know what topic to what get off topic.
What did everybody do today?
Yeah.
What happened today?
It's been a couple weeks, Dan.
It has been. I was up at DragonCon.
As a matter of fact, you were not here last episode.
Yes.
You missed all of the fun of Rasputin.
Yes.
Fun of Rasputin.
Pedro's mind blown. Apparently, he did not know about Rasputin's epic ending of many, many attempts at death.
Oh.
I thought that was very well known. But Pedro was like, what? Right? They shot him over. Yeah.
That's like the thing everyone knows about Rasputin. And then, like, all the other bits, you're like, oh, no, no. He was messed up.
Yeah,
like,
no. He had no idea. So, filling in that picture for him was great.
But I just learned about that.
Did they do?
It's great. Yeah. It's a great story for his parents. And he's a character in a Hellboy.
I listened to the podcast. He was very surprised.
I was wanting to like say so many things. I was like, I have to like really keep this streamlined because this. Oh,
so
anyway,
we're gonna have to come
Russian,
back to it.
Oh, Russian history is just crazy.
God, so many people so killing.
That was such a small section of Russian history.
And that's pretty much it's the final curtain of the craziness that is the Romanov family.
Like, yeah, it was literally the end. We're going to go backwards. We start with the end, and then we're going to do the prequels.
We are so...
we haven't done Ivan the Terrible.
Yes, exactly.
He's a fun air quote.
I think we made it a point when we began this. I didn't want to go chronologically. We hop
around. Sure, we do. We hop around like crazy.
Often.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And picking little pieces here and there. What was the Failed Crusades one? That was
failed
the first
Crusades
episode. We picked the lesser known failed ones as the first
Crusades. We did lesser known failed ones, and then we did... and then we really just focused on Henry II, so we talked about... Second, a little bit, and then we got into third, and we still haven't done the third yet.
Which
is my favorite.
Is it?
Yes.
We'll get to it.
Well, it's Saladin and Richard going at it, so it's always a fun part.
Yeah, that's Robin Hood. When we do Robin Hood.
We get Robin Hood, right.
Robin
well,
Hood.
Then you got to tell us, you got to recap us what pulled you away from that awesome Romanoff episode.
Oh, yeah. So I was at Dragon Con in Atlanta.
Dragon Con. Dragon Con. All right.
Just like Pedro was pulled away for his work, I was pulled away for my work.
Sure, yes, absolutely. Your work sounds more fun. My work. Yours is like dragons, and his is power lines.
I think it would be, you know, dragons.
It's like fantasy versus like superhero.
Yeah. Dragon Con was not a good convention.
Really?
It's very big. I know, it's very popular. It's the biggest convention in the Southeast.
And where is it?
It's in Atlanta, Georgia. Ooh. And that's strike one.
Why?
It's in Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta is Georgia's one redeeming quality, I think. Well, Savannah's okay.
I mean, look, I love a good varsity dog from time to time. the Puppet Museum is fantastic.
Sure.
The whales. Everyone loves the whale sharks. The whales. Right. The whales,
oh my God, there's so many things that you've said that I don't have a...
It's all Atlanta specific culture. Shout out to our listeners in Atlanta.
If you are a tourist, Atlanta is the place to be.
The TV show Atlanta.
Right.
They have whale sharks there.
Yeah, two whale sharks are in Atlanta.
Really?
Yes.
That's cool.
All right, I'll tell Mike to bring you next time.
Yay.
We'll go there. You can come too.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. The Coca-Cola plant, they got all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
But if you are a business person or just trying to get regular service at a restaurant or anything, it's just horrible.
Aww.
It's just, and I understand, you know, they have thousands and thousands of people in these hotels, but I expect when I check in for my hotel room to be ready, and I expected it to be clean before 7 o'clock at night. So, you know, we start off with that, and their excuse was, well, it's Dragon Con. No, that's not an excuse.
Well, yeah, Atlanta's
not
really...
It's not like it's, like, jumped up on you. It's not like a week before they've gone, oh, by the way, we're having this huge convention with, like, 100,000 people. Yes,
exactly.
FYI.
Atlanta, not really known for being a convention town. Known for a lot of stuff, not known for being a convention place.
I might be wrong, but is Atlanta, Georgia, where Donald Trump had his little business mishap where he, like, tried to open a bunch of, like, casinos and a huge hotel and then didn't pay anybody for any of their services because he, like...
I don't think gambling's legal in Georgia.
I don't think it's in Atlanta.
That was you're probably thinking Atlantic City.
Atlantic City,
okay.
Which is in New Jersey.
That's where I was thinking.
No. Atlantic City, it's like Atlanta, except wetter and whiter.
Atlanta's the place we burned in the Civil War. That's Atlanta.
And it should have been Atlantic City as well.
It should have burned Atlantic City.
Should have burned
City.
Them both.
But,
two birds, one stone.
Yeah. And there's an interesting Civil War history if we ever go there with Atlanta, and I'd love to talk about that.
Oh,
but,
sure.
Atlanta there. Currently, yeah, not so fun.
And the con itself just meh.
Well, the problem is they never rented a convention center for it.
Where was that?
Originally, when it started out in the 80s, it was in a hotel. It was at
most conventions started.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
And as it grew, they just rented out another hotel next to it. And then another hotel next to it. So it's like five hotels and strip malls all rented out during this time. Mm-hmm. So you end up traveling blocks at a time to go anywhere.
Do it like it's some sort of film festival or music festival.
To give you an idea, the celebrity meet and greet area was down in the lower lobby of the Marriott.
Okay.
But then if you wanted photo ops with these celebrities, you had to go down to the basement level of an area.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the celebrities themselves wanted to get a bite to eat or something, the green room was on the 43rd floor of the Marriott.
The 43rd
floor? And here's the thing. All these, you know, and that's the only place you could go up. You got like 60,000 people in all these four hotels.
Yeah.
Each hotel maybe has six elevators at most.
Mm.
And you have things on multiple levels of your hotel.
And everyone's trying to get to all... It's like the first day on a cruise ship, man. Oh, my goodness. That sounds terrible.
And, so I went there because, obviously, I was making... I was meeting agents.
Oh, yeah.
For celebrities for SuperCon later on. So that was why I had to go. And we wanted to observe their wrestling show. They had a wrestling show on Thursday. So I wanted to see what the competition looked like.
Did they like a similar cosplay style wrestling show or just a normal wrestling?
They just do normal wrestling.
Did they contract a company to do it or did they put it on themselves?
It's a bunch of mid-Georgia guys. Okay. It's a bunch of mid-Georgia guys that put it together. I don't know exactly who the organizer is. Mm-hmm. I didn't bother to check.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just a wrestling show on Thursday nights. Some guys cosplay, some guys don't. It's kind of just if you want to show up and cosplay, but you're still wrestling as you.
So it's like, oh, this guy showed up. Yeah, okay, I get it.
Mm-hmm. And it was... And
not as cool.
And it, like every wrestling promotion at Halloween.
Yeah.
Have random people turn up not in their gear, and you're like, okay, mm-hmm. we should be doing this, are we?
And they broke the kind of one, the big no-no of FSCW, which is long shows. They had a three-hour wrestling show.
Oh, my God.
Three-hour wrestling show.
That's a no-no not just for, like, FSCW. That's a no-no for all wrestling. That's as long as Raw.
Yeah.
Yes.
Raw. Yeah,
WrestleMania is like three and a half hours. That's
really good. It's like seven now.
Oh, yeah. WrestleMania is like 10 hours.
Well, I mean, I talk about when it's on TV.
You had to sit through all
of it.
They
start
early. You had to sit through everything.
No, I didn't. I went to the bar.
Oh, good.
That's awesome.
We both were at the same event, but she gets, she has to do duties. You kind of have to be there, right? Because do you have to make appearances with Jack, or you just want to do it because you don't want him to be by himself, or?
No. Oh, I do have to do, I had to do Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Had to.
Had to do Hall of Fame.
Had to see these legends. Yeah. You know, walk down the red carpet.
Did you see her at the Hall of Fame?
Well, yeah, I'm sorry you had to do it. No,
yeah, right?
No. Well, actually, to be fair, like, man, that thing was like 5 hours long. And I was sat next to Drake Maverick. Like James, Renee's husband.
Yeah, he's and, he's cool.
He had a sequin blazer on.
Of course he did.
And I had like no sleeves on. So I'm like sat next to him, and every time he turns, he's like scratching me with the with this the sequins. Blazer. So like a couple of times I'm letting it go. Like Jack's got velvet on, so I'm like snuggling off the chair. But then my side starts hurting, so I have to go back and I'm like, James, stop turning.
You're cutting me with your blousy shirt. That's fine.
So yeah, it was watching WrestleMania, but
terrible,
way less talent.
That's just crazy. You can't expect people to actually care about like a match.
Your local regional guys that no one knows because there's no.
I mean, they had a following.
They don't even care about like big wrestlers after 3 hours. They're tired. They're hungry. That's true. That bum hurts.
Yeah.
Was there an intermission?
But no. By hour two.
No intermission.
No, it was just straight up. I left after 2 hours because I'm like, nope, 2 hours. That's how a wrestling show should be.
You were texting me.
Yeah, I was like, nope, I'm done. I watched who I wanted to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, Leon pointed out some of the guys he thought would be good. Mm-hmm. And I watched them everything like that. And that's what we did. And then it was weird because, you know, these guys are like looking at me waiting for me to come up to them because Leon told them I was from FSCW.
It's like, hey, the scout's here. So the guy like, is no here. Way. He's the here man. To check you out. Yeah.
You're loving being the man of it right now.
I kind
of
like it.
You're loving it.
Hey, the guy's here. Make sure you put on a good show for him. Okay?
You come to me and you want a favor.
I may have worn my FSCW shirt.
Oh, come on now. All right, terrible. You're the Mets scout showed up at a game with the Mets hat on.
I am the biggest mark for myself. If I come up, like, so I did like a really funny thing with Sam Hayes. Like, we did the funniest match and like
at the latest Queens?
At the Queens of Combat. And I swear, I was pissing myself through it. I was just laughing my ass. We did this thing where she like shadowed me behind and then crawled under the ring and I turned around and couldn't see her. And then like, what made you think she came up with that? Oh, this girl. But no, she is amazing. Like, she was so much fun to work. Our movesets just went so well together. But yeah, I was like, I was cracking up. I'm a mark for myself. I don't even care.
You gotta be. Gotta be your own biggest fan.
Right?
I mean, look, you're talking to Mike's with my face on them.
I got my whole family and friends to vote me as best tag team for Fest. So.
I love it.
There you go.
Take that, guys.
You won the Festies.
I think that's my second. I think we won it last year, too.
Yeah, I'll vote for you. I didn't even know it was a thing.
Tech Squad really is. No, Tech Squad has always been my favorite tag team in Florida. And I'm not saying that because we've been together for that long, but you have a fun dynamic about yourself.
Is it because you're part of the team?
I may or may not have managed you early on, yeah, but...
disclaimer.
Yeah, but I mean, I think Jeff adds to it. Yeah. Jeff is that part that
it's me trying to be a serious wrestler, mm-hmm. Trevor not knowing how to be a serious wrestler, and Jeff.
Trevor's one of my favorite people just because I just never know what he's thinking, like genuinely.
Me neither.
No clue. Like he just has one of those faces that's like mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, he's on his own planet.
Yeah.
His head is somewhere else at all times.
Hard to play poker against him.
Yeah. Oh boy. So yeah, that's where I was. And that's good. Atlanta.
Well, hopefully you got some good intel. Sorry it wasn't that great. Sorry you missed an amazing.
I
know you listened to it, but man.
I listened to it.
It was really good. And she did it just the way you did it, too. No notes, no nothing. It was like off the top of my head.
It's a history major thing.
It was fantastic.
That's like where I go. Like, that's what I was taught. Well, kind of.
But. Yeah. Well, it's good enough.
That's
good
my,
enough
wheelhouse, for us. My wheelhouse. My
mm-hmm.
wheelhouse.
Me and Paige were both like, have all the notes you want. Do bring your computers. Do a PowerPoint. You're like, nope.
No.
Top of the dome. Yeah, that's awesome.
So.
That's the thing. When you find like an area of history that you really like, mm-hmm. you kind of like certain things stick in your head. Because like, I sure. can't remember dates for the life of me. Like I could tell you when like maybe a couple of the First World War dates were mm-hmm. and a couple of the second, but
like, well, that's what we got Dan for. This guy is. Or he's
I
like,
can barely remember what year was.
I born. Think they landed on Normandy Beach. It was 7:41. No, 7:40 a.m. I think it was when they first landed. So what are you going to hit us with this week,
Dan? Well, we're actually going to be talking about a contemporary period to the Romanovs. While the Romanovs and Rasputin is all happening, there is a big to-do in Mexico. At
Mexico!
This time.
Mexico!
Oh, I love the Mexican music.
The Revolution!
Revolution!
So, we'll get to the part. Then this is, you know... This is why, you know, in America, we love World War II. We obsess about it. Yes. We have a big monument to it in D.C.
The greatest generation.
You mean that war that you had to, like, are massively
gonna start?
Convinced
are you gonna, are you
to even
start?
Join?
Oh, you mean the war that we won single-handedly?
Hey. We got jumped. We got jumped.
We did get jumped. We got sucker punched.
We're like, whoa. We weren't going to do anything, but all right.
Yeah, you called out the big guns. Here they are.
So we love our World War II.
Yes.
I mean,
so many movies
John Wade wouldn't have a career without World War II.
Yes, yeah.
But if you're actually talking about the most important war time frame in the 20th century, mm-hmm. it's World War I. It's the Great War.
Oh, 100%.
It smashes empires. You heard about it with the Romanovs. They're one of the casualties of this war. Mm. It smashes every empire except for the British one, and even then, the clock is ticking mm-hmm. on how long that's going to last.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were devastated. They had to, you know, everyone was devastated.
Stiff upper lip, darling.
I mean, you made it through the 20s. Good job.
Let's be honest, we just weren't landlocked.
Yes.
Like, that's how we got. We got mm-hmm. good pilots and a lot of water between us and the trenches.
I just remembered you were British. I was so confused at the joke. My
that's
bad.
That's okay. Don't worry.
So it's this time.
I'm going to start talking like this, just in case anybody thinks I'm talking weird. Just to be clear, I am British.
Extra.
Very British.
Throwing a little extra on it.
That time period's very, very important.
Yeah.
It's imperialism is at its height. And at this point, Mexico is one of the staging areas. And they don't get involved in the Great War because they're involved in their own Great War.
Okay.
The Mexican Revolution lasts from 1910 to 1920.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at about 1.5 million Mexicans dead by the end of it. And that's just battle casualties.
And what were the years again?
1910 to 1920.
God,
and how many died?
About 1.5 million casualties for that one. And that's, you know, and that's just Mexicans killing themselves. It's a civil war inside of there.
Mm.
So it's the bloodiest war in Mexican history.
Mm.
Civil wars usually are the bloodiest wars in any country.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You guys killing each other, right?
Yeah. It's how big's your country? All right, that's what the casualties mean.
That
right.
was always like the most one of the most popular pub quiz questions. It was like, which war did the most British people die?
And
it's
the English Civil War, right?
The English Civil War. Mm.
Same thing with the Americans. It's the American Civil War.
Oh my God.
We don't even...
By a mile.
American Civil War, you're looking at about 600,000 or so casualties.
Mm-hmm.
In World War II, we only have about 420,000 casualties.
There you go.
So only, but, you know...
And then compared that to Mexican Civil War.
Civil War, which is, you know, 1.5 there. You compare it to the Russian Civil Wars right after the Romanovs fall, and those white and red Russians just destroying each other.
Yeah.
Like, millions dying. So, Civil War has always...
Life is cheap, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. If you're an aristocrat, it absolutely is.
Yeah.
So we're going to go a little bit further back here to talk about how the revolution starts and why it goes. A while back, we talked about Cinco de Mayo Benito Juarez and, you know, saving Mexico from the French.
Mm-hmm.
Slash Austrians.
That was the episode. What is the French intervention?
French
what
intervention. What is the war of French intervention? Right, right. So they all pull out there. And now they're out completely. Europeans are really not interested in Mexico at all at this time. Mm-hmm.
Why not? Racist? Or no resources?
Actually, that concept is now starting to be formed. You do start to get a little bit of white man's burden stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not even the racist. It's the resources.
Yeah.
And it's the Monroe Doctrine.
Because, like, all the silver gone or something. Like,
silver was gone.
That's about all I know about, like, because, like, the silver caused inflation in Europe. That's about the only Latin American history I'm aware of.
So, like, treasure, Sierra Madre style, the rush for minerals. And
right. A lot of that stuff was still, you know, the United States took half of Mexico after the Mexican-American War. So, you know, it wasn't as profitable. And by this time, the Europeans discovered that, yeah, you could meddle in Latin American affairs and make a little bit of money, or you could divide Africa up and take it all, which is what they're about to do.
Yay.
And Mr. Bismarck is going to hold a very civilized convention in the 1880s called the Congo Conference of Berlin, which all the European nations get together and they just draw lines in Africa of who's going to take
this. This is what we're going to go take.
Yeah. It's like, that way, guys, we can be civilized about this and nobody gets hurt.
Who got the short straw that got Ethiopia?
Italy.
Of course you know it's Italy.
They lost three times to the Ethiopians. Three times to the Ethiopians. This is why my people are not known for their war.
Yeah.
After the Roman Empire, it just kind of, that was it.
That's funny.
We're known for our shoes. We make nice
great shoes.
Now. Fantastic.
Got those Bruno Mollies. Yeah. Yeah.
I will have me some Italian food any day of the week.
Food, shoes. You know, we're
great culture. Great culture towards now. Women, right. Apparently. Yeah, there's that also as well.
Yeah, I mean, we elected a porn star to the Congress, so, I mean, you know.
Well, that's actually quite,
it's a bit of fun.
That's actually quite forward-thinking.
That's the Italian politics.
not in a good way. Not progressive in a good way. Okay, never mind.
No. I
mean, that's another episode.
That's a totally different. Another we can talk about that. Yeah.
Italian, what are current Italian politics?
Berlusconi and the Renzi. Yeah, I can talk about those guys.
Another episode, okay.
So
back to Mexico.
Benito Juarez is now in charge of Mexico, and it is in the Mexican Constitution, so that another Maximilian I does not happen, another Santa Ana does not happen. Mexican president may only run for one term for 6 years.
Okay. This is before or after? When is this?
So this is after the French intervention. So we're still in 1870.
So it's way before FDR, yeah. Which means it's before America saying there's a term limit on president.
Right, right. 1870s. United States is done with their civil war.
President can still run as many times as they want.
Right. Yeah. Germany has just formed. So this is where we are now.
Okay.
Okay. So Benito Juarez does his reform. 6 years come up, but he's still not convinced that the reform is done, so he breaks the Constitution and he runs again.
Whoa!
Well, at this time, the conservatives get quite angry at this liberal person who is breaking them, violating the Constitution.
Right.
So they bring up one of their own, a man by the name of Porfirio Diaz.
That name sounds very familiar.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
So he stays president for quite some time, if I recall.
So he and the conservatives overthrow this stinky liberal who does not understand the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sets up his own Constitution. And the one thing he takes away from the Constitution
is
term limits.
Which is the thing that the other guy wanted to throw away anyway.
Right.
Oh, man.
So he becomes...
Keep your term limits, guys.
Yep. So he becomes pretty much president of Mexico for up until 1910.
That's a long time. Yes. That's a long time,
like,
to be our president.
Right?
It's a period known as the Porfirado. And it is interesting because this is he's the most controversial figure in Mexican history. He is the sinner and the saint of Mexico. To this day, you will not find a street, a statue, a museum, anything named after him because he's so controversial.
Wow.
He builds Mexico up. He absolutely does. Mexico goes through a gilded age. Like, huge progress, industrialization. They make deals with foreigners for better loans than they've ever had before. By 1900, they're the fourth largest petroleum producer. They've gone from 400 miles of railroad to 15,000 miles of railroad all over the place.
Wow.
The army is now cut in half of its size. It's no longer bloated and fat. He decided he's going to have a small army with state-of-the-art technology than a large army that can barely afford bullets. True. He takes this model from the Germans.
It's pretty smart.
Builds it up completely. We're talking about really by the Mexico's out of debt by 1900.
Mm-hmm.
It takes some time.
So the conservative model works in this, in this case.
Conservative model works in this case. Well, let's put a asterisk by this.
Okay, all right.
My American,
you know, is going to go wrong. You just know.
Well, also, put a little asterisk here. My American conservatives. This is a conservative model with a small military budget.
Yes, that was an interesting point you threw out there.
Yes, small military budget. You can do.
We definitely don't have one of those.
When you don't spend more than 24 of your allies combined. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? It's totally reasonable what you guys spend on your military. I mean,
the American dollar is currently backed by GE, so
right.
Take that away. What
look,
we got?
Rebecca, if we don't update our tanks every single year, the terrorists will win. We have to spend $1 billion to change the license plates on those tanks.
And in order to keep updating the tanks, we need to sell the previous tanks to make money to make more tanks.
But heaven forbid we actually use any of that money to buy Kevlar for our troops on the ground.
What's Kevlar going to do?
That's not actually...
You're American. Bullets can't touch you. You're boss people. Come on.
That plus what's Kevlar going to do against those sweet, sweet tanks? Right. Come on.
So there we go. So Porfirio Diaz. Now the reason why it does so well...
Mm-hmm.
Is because the foreigners have been making these great deals with him because he's been giving them Mexican land.
Mm-hmm.
By 1905, only 2% of Mexican land is actually owned by the people of Mexico.
Oh,
it's all corporations from Germany and France and England and the United States.
He leases out the land, essentially?
Yes, he leases out the land. The biggest producer is actually the British Petroleums. I don't know.
You're welcome, Mexico.
Yeah. I don't know if you, they probably, I don't know how long they lasted in Britain. Doheny Oil was a big one as well. So some major ones. And a lot was invested by Americans too, especially the American journalist William Randolph Hearst.
Ooh.
He had a lot invested in Mexico, especially his cattle and everything like that.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And of course, you know William Randolph Hearst being the model of Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yellow journalism, this guy.
So you're looking at that. You're looking at about 30% unemployment rate for the Mexican people.
Pretty high.
16% homeless rate.
Pretty high. Not good.
So
not good.
On paper, Mexico is doing fantastic.
But when you look up close.
When you actually see the people not...
Well, it's like, I mean, look, America, we got 3% unemployment. We're doing great. But then we also have, what, 40 million people living in poverty and how many homeless, et cetera, et cetera. So on paper, yeah, looking like we're doing pretty good. But you look up close, it's like, oh, actually, no.
And only like 4/5 of your country can actually read that piece of paper because 1/5 of your country is illiterate.
There you go.
Is that true?
That is true.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah, but now you got Audible.com. This episode brought to you by Audible.com. Is that one of your favorite books? No, that's not true. it's a bummer. You know, people need to read more. Yeah,
it sounds very similar to like the sort of old like way that England used to be kind of split up between lords, and then people would work the land, but nobody really owned the land, but they worked for people.
That's exactly what it was. The dons were still in charge. The aristocracy from the old Spanish colonial days, they were still landowners, powerful people.
Don's such a bad word than lord, isn't it?
Right?
Like, lord sounds very regal, but like don is like, I'm the don.
You don't mess with that. They're dons.
And they had this very like these like Don Quixote plantations and everything.
Yeah,
and people would work and barely make any money. And one of them, one of these peasants who eventually is going to be beaten and arrested and everything, was a young man by the name of Francisco Pancho Villa. And this is, he's going to start hating Diaz.
Hey, Pancho Villa, that's a name everyone knows.
Yeah, Pancho Villa.
And down in the south, Emiliano Zapata.
Ah, Zapata, yeah, that's what a name a lot of people know.
So we'll get, we're starting, the Diaz sows the seeds for all of these people.
I guess it makes sense. You get a lot of people angry, you take away all their stuff, it's bound that leaders are going to rise to be like, we need to reclaim what is rightfully ours, what's been taken away by the state or the government or whoever, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, Porfirio Diaz's whole line was order and then progress. We have to control the country first, and then we can make the progress. And again, he built it up. It was nearly fully industrialized by 1910. It was the first Latin American country to actually be fully industrialized. The others had failed because they relied on foreign loans too much. Mm. Cipriano Castro comes as an idea. This is a great little one-off story here. So he's the president of Venezuela.
Okay.
And he wants to play the system. So he gets a loan from Britain. He gets a loan from France. He gets a loan from Italy and the Germans.
Gets a lot of loans.
Gets loans from everybody.
All right. Even he backs out all his cards.
No one talk to each other. Like, no one said, are you lending?
Yeah, no, no. Nobody's...
There's no international experience TransUnion at this point where they're like...
This is about 1900s at the time Teddy Roosevelt was president.
So he can't really run his credit background there. No.
And so the time comes where they're like, okay, you need to start paying. It's like, nope, not going to pay you.
Uh-oh.
What are you going to do, invade me? You can't. Monroe Doctrine says the United States will get involved if you try to invade me. Nah. Mm. So he tries to play the whole thing, and they're like, shit, the United States will really... And the Germans and the British are like, well, I don't want to go to war with the United States. Yeah. Like, it's clearly the Monroe Doctrine. And so they're like, well, he played the whole system. And for a while, they were like, how are we going to get this money? And they even check with the US. They're like, are you going to invade? They're like, yeah, we're going to invade. Sorry, dude. Like, if you invade, we're going to go to war with you. That's kind of the policy.
Yeah, we wrote this piece of paper. We signed it.
We got to protect our chillins down there in the South.
Our newspaperman's got his cows down there.
So the British have this great idea, though.
Okay.
Yay. The British are coming.
We are going to invade them at all. But we've got this thing that is the largest in the world at this time called the British Navy. Yeah. We're just going to make sure no ships come out of Venezuela.
Wow. So we're talking we're talking sanctions.
Yeah, so we're just going to starve you
like
out.
No one.
There we go.
So then the United States actually has to step in.
Okay.
And basically the United States calls bluff. They call Monroe Doctrine. They're like, look, technically you're still declaring war on them.
They call
Monroe. You need to leave or we are going to declare war. Mm-hmm.
But, 1, 2, 3, 4.
But
I declare Monroe Doctrine war.
But Venezuela, you need to start paying the debt. And we're going to put you on a payment plan. And we can do this because I'm just going to write this thing called the Roosevelt Corollary.
Is it Teddy Roosevelt?
Yes. Wow. The Roosevelt Corollary says the United States, and it still applies today, the United States is allowed to interfere in any Latin American country that we believe to be financially or governmentally unstable.
Oh,
we can go in and fix whatever we want.
Wow. How do you like that?
And nobody could say no to Big Teddy Roosevelt because he had a big stick and a great white fleet at the time.
Man.
Yes.
That's going to cause some problems down the road. I'm just going to warn you now.
Teddy was a mighty president, but that definitely could, yes. Things make more sense for Latin American history when you think about, that's not good.
Can I just inquire, during this Mexican Revolution, am I safe in assuming that all of the guns and ammunition are coming from the USA, as they so often do?
Depends what year you're talking about.
So they weren't the sole supplier of ammunition.
There's a reason I mentioned this corollary.
The corollary.
It's going to play in a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so.
So back to the end.
We've got the backstory of what's leading to this revolution. Right.
I had to give you a little backstory there.
Revolution. Revolution.
So, election time in Mexico. And Porfirio Diaz is ready to run again. Unopposed, as always. Except something happens that actually turns the upper middle class against him. There's a depression. There's a hit in 1908, I want to say.
Okay.
Worldwide. And everyone takes a little bit of a dip.
Okay.
And Mexico takes a really big dip. And so they're against him. And so he realizes, all right, listen, guys, I'm not going to run again. I promise you can have someone else. And so he says, I'm going to bow to the elections.
Liza Minnelli. Oh, the Liza Minnellis.
Do you like that pun?
That's good. That's a good one.
That's a RuPaul Drag Race, that one.
I like
Liza Minnelli.
So another man runs against him, an aristocrat, a newspaper editor named Francisco Madero. Just like the beer.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And he's going to run again, and it looks like he's going to run against him, going to win, and he starts putting out in his paper all the things that he is going to accomplish. And, like fixing all the problems that he believes the Diaz administration has done. So that was his mistake.
No, he's talking shit. He called him out. Like, what's he expect to happen? He's a Don. Come on. Don't call out the big Don, because he's going to have you.
One of the things in the Mexican Constitution, it does not have freedom of the press in there. It all has to be approved by the Porfirio Diaz government.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how much work you can get done when you don't allow people to have their own opinions.
Yeah.
In the short term, it's fantastic.
It's fake news.
It's fake news, right.
Mm-hmm. The truest.
Oh,
that's not good.
So, he broke government law.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to go to jail for printing those things. Mm-hmm. Well, if he's in jail, he can't run for presidente. And since nobody can run for president, there's no candidate to run for presidente, Porfirio Diaz says, listen, for you guys, I will run again.
Oh, what, fill this empty spot. What a magnanimous guy. That's fantastic. What a great dude. You're really thinking of, thinking of the people.
Yeah, and bye-bye, Madero. And that's when the dam breaks. That's when the people are like, no, we're done with you. All
right.
Massive revolutions from all over the country.
Mm.
This is Zapata gets involved and Pancho Villa gets involved. They're on Madero's side.
Okay.
And another guy by the name of Pascal Orozco. Orozco, very important here because he will play in a big factor later. Actually, anybody I mention is going to play a big factor. It's a very big cycle.
Sure, any name you remember over 100 years later, I'm sure, is worth remembering.
Right.
Yes.
The sad part is about this Mexican Revolution. All these heroes and legends of the Mexican Revolution I'm going to talk about, none of them survived the revolution. They live by the sword, they die by the sword. Oh, they all die by the revolution.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
It claims them all in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, none of them die a natural death, with one exception. Porfirio Diaz, actually.
That's for Diaz, man. That's
so he realizes the revolution's against him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, all right, fine. You want to control these people, Madero.
Mm-hmm.
And his last words before he leaves and resigns is, says, let Madero tame the tiger he has released. Let me see what you think you're going to do when you give all these people opinions and you promise all these things to all these groups to make sure everyone is equal and happy.
Oh, so it's like, you want democracy here? Have it. Enjoy how messy it is. Yeah,
and so he goes to France and Paris, and Porfirio Diaz dies in a nice mansion in France in 1915.
Aw, all the houses in France are nice.
Even the little cottages on the farms are
You walk
beautiful.
In and there's a big pantry of food.
So there he is.
Cartoon birds flying around fixing stuff.
And Madero discovers something as soon as he becomes presidente. The reason Porfirio Diaz could afford that mansion in Paris, he took most of the treasury.
He took everything that's...
Oh my God.
Of course he did.
No.
So now try and keep your campaign promises with no money.
Yeah.
Boy.
Yeah.
What a day.
If anyone's ever like crime doesn't pay or cheaters never prosper, just point them towards Porfirio Diaz. And like, boom. Look at this guy. Boom. This guy won it all.
Why was he allowed into France? Why was he allowed? Didn't the French go like, nope, we don't want you?
At this point, France was kind of that neutral spot that any revolutionary or any political prisoner could go to.
They're kind of Swiss.
They're about to get it up the butt real soon.
Exactly. Hopefully he was paying those war bonds with that money, because things are about to turn south real quick over there.
About to get occupied.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Madero is now in charge. Mm-hmm. One of the things he does, he doesn't have the money to make the schools that he promised, or give the workers raises like he promised, or give the land to the people, because he doesn't have the money to reimburse the rich people that he was going to take the land from.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody gets what they want.
Apart from him, he's presidente.
He's presidente.
Presidente always gets what you want, yeah.
Now, Pascal Orozco was part of this because he was a bit of an opportunist. He wanted to become general of all the armies, minister of war. That was the position he was promised by Madero.
It's a good title.
But Madero, when he forms his cabinet, chooses a fellow aristocrat named Vistuliano Carranza instead.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. See, I'm gonna say that that's probably a smart decision on his part to not put a revolutionary in charge of the huge army.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case you might not agree with his version of revolution. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want a big army behind him being like, well, he's the top don.
Right.
Like, we have to follow him.
Yeah, top don. Like,
top don.
Top don.
And for general of all the army, he picks Victoriano Huerta.
Mm-hmm.
A jackal, as Pancho Villa called him.
Mm.
Didn't trust him at all. And so Orozco gets angry and starts his own revolution because he didn't get the job he was promised. So now Madero...
Imagine if he had an army. Imagine.
See? So... And Zapata gets tired of Madero not fulfilling his promises, so he starts a revolution in the South.
Yes. Well, mm-hmm. yeah, he's all about down there in South Mexico.
Yeah, he's your happy socialist communist hero, really, in Mexico. Yeah. He's kind of like the guy. Which, ironically, Charlton Heston will play him in the movie.
Yeah, he loved playing brown people. He wasn't a fan of brown people, but he loved playing them in movies. It was weird.
And he played communists, even though he himself was
a staunch anti-communist. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that just goes to say, when you're an actor, 1950s you just take the part. Way. Yeah.
Does nobody know they're poor at this point? Like, they're just getting mad that all this is not happening, but they don't care that, like, hey, all the money got stolen?
So, oddly, like, revolutions are really often backed by very rich people because, like, you have, like, people in charge who are, you know, the most in charge, and then people underneath tend to actually be more rich and have more power than the one person in charge. So, if the one person in charge starts doing something that they don't like, then they're like, okay, we're just going to pay 1,000 people to come and tell you.
Naughty. I feel like this guy was the only one who tried, and he's like, sorry, dude, we're broke. Like,
yeah, sure. I'm assuming the person who is Presidente is not an unwealthy fellow.
Oh, he's an aristocrat. No, yeah, Madero was definitely a don already.
Yeah.
He just wants more power. Mm-hmm. This little fiefdom's
not enough. Revolutions are expensive as well.
Like. Well, I mean, you look at any communist or socialist revolutionary, they've all been rich. I mean, yeah. Karl Marx was wealthy and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, Engels was wealthy. The poor, I've never found a poor person that actually had time to write down an economic manifesto to make himself better in life.
You got hard to find
being in the factories.
Yeah, hard to find a poor person educated enough to be able to get to a point where they can think of revolution.
There was an exception to that in Germany in a few years because he was not rich.
He was not rich. You're right.
He was homeless for a lot of his life.
Yes, he was not rich. But yeah, even influential women, most of them were of the aristocracy in the 19th century. Eva Perón. Oh, well, of course.
You mean Eva. Talk about Madonna?
Madonna. So we have that going on, the two revolutions up north. Pancho Villa stays with Madero. He really believes, like, look, he's a nice guy. I understand what he's going through. I really believe we just keep supporting him. And he also doesn't trust Huerta. Mm. He's going to stay with Huerta like white on rice because he doesn't trust him.
He doesn't trust Huerta. He doesn't like Orozco.
All right.
Pancho Villa doesn't like no one except Madero
and, you know, Pancho Villa. Okay. Now, this is Pancho Villa is a man with an ego the size of a planet. Like, he loves being Pancho Villa.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Now, Pancho Villa is very happy that there is only one Pancho Villa. And if there was another Pancho Villa, he would shoot him. Nobody could be like me. I had to be larger than life. Colorful character. Very colorful character. Great, you know, a fun revolutionary.
Yeah.
So they defeat Orozco in the north. They defeat Zapata in the south, and that's when the jackal hatches his plan. He accuses Pancho Villa of stealing munitions and makes him an outlaw, so he has to flee the army or else he faces execution.
Whoa.
Now, with Pancho Villa out of the way, Huerta comes back to Mexico City with the army, surrounds the capital, and sieges the capital for 10 days.
To what end?
Forces Madero to sign his resignation.
Oh.
And then as soon as Madero signs his resignation, puts a bullet in his brain.
And that's the
end of Madero.
That poor guy.
Why not just shoot him and then forge his signature? What's the point of making him go through the whole sad rigmarole of signing? Oh, poor guy.
Let Madero tame the tiger he has released.
Yeah, man. Oh, my goodness gracious.
I know. And it sucks because Diaz really gets the last laugh in all of this.
Yeah, it's true. He's rich and dying in France. Like, oh, I
and he dies. He dies like, after Madero.
I'm living it up.
He's hanging out in France. He's having a good time. He hears there's something going on in Bosnia right now. But whatever, it's all good.
It's nothing. He doesn't care.
He does. Whatever.
Amazing.
Yeah, the Austrians won't do anything.
He's old anyway. Right. What does he care?
So now we have the glorious presidency of Victoriano Huerta. Which everybody agrees, historians, Mexicans alike, was a worse dictatorship than Porfirio Diaz ever was.
Wow.
Like, he made him look like, he made people want Porfirio Diaz back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean like how, like, hey, I'd be happy if George Bush came back.
Right, right. That kind of, it was that kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, that wasn't so bad, actually, you know, yeah.
And so now
at least he went to college.
Pancho Villa and Zapata, and another guy named Obregón. Who are now going to start another revolution, this time against Victoriano Huerta. Now, before the revolutions were easy enough to come by, guns were coming across from the United States for a long period of time. Now we are in the year of 1912, 1913. Woodrow Wilson is now president. Mm-hmm. And besides being a huge racist and and being okay with the second rise of the Ku Klux Klan, he also decided that he was going to ban any guns coming into Mexico. So he bans guns going across the border.
Interesting.
It's a whole sanction on arms dealing.
Okay.
So now, in order to kill someone in Mexico, it's very expensive. You need money. Well, Zapata is going to get his money by raiding people. But Pancho Villa decides he is going to get the money from the people he can't buy guns from yet.
And
he writes a letter to New Jersey. Now,
what?
New Jersey,
New Jersey,
Mr. Crespo, my Hollywood friend here, my movie buff.
Yeah, I think I know where it is to go.
Where's the movie capital of the world by 1913?
1913? Oh, Edison is making movies in Menlo Park,
right.
New Jersey. Yeah, yeah. New York is that whole area. Mm.
And one of those film companies is called the Mutual Film Company.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
He writes the Mutual Film Company. He says, hey, why don't you film actual battle?
And starring Pancho Villa, Pancho Villa as himself.
For $20,000 cash.
God. Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah
yes.
Yeah. They made an HBO movie
and
with
starring Pancho Villa as himself.
Called and starring Pancho Villa as himself.
Yeah.
It's all about that. Yeah, yeah.
And it's about, and Frank Thayer is a real person. Frank Thayer goes across the border
with
$20,000 in gold.
Yeah. Oh, in gold.
In gold. Had to be gold. Hard cash.
Wow.
Couldn't be cash. Had to be gold.
You couldn't convince me to go into Mexico during a civil war with $20,000 worth of gold.
To film it, too.
Film the war.
And the filming would be fine. It's just carrying that much cash. Yeah. Like, I feel like when I've got like a couple of hundred in my pocket in New York, I'm like, oh my God. No one know I've got money in my pocket.
I wouldn't want to go into Mexico now with that much of gold. And this is also, okay, so if you want to put this in a perspective, 1948, The Treasure of Sierra Madre. Uh-huh. Films in Mexico. It's the first Hollywood production to film in a foreign country, and they filmed actually in Mexico. So this is 30 years before
that.
20 years before they shot that movie, the first official production. They actually like, let's go and shoot an actual war. Let's shoot actual battles in Mexico. That's a wild awesome.
So
that takes some chutzpah.
Right. It's what it
was. I mean, it's small.
Some cajones.
It's really small.
Yeah.
Huevos. So yeah. So he meets with Pancho Villa. Frank Thayer meets with Pancho Villa. They sign the deal.
That's awesome.
And there he is at the Battle of Torreon. And
that's crazy. He's
just going crazy.
Socialism meet capitalism.
Right. And this war is going on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, side note, they go back with the film and the footage. Mm-hmm. And they try to show it. And they don't like it, American film audiences. And if you've seen the movie, you kind of know what's coming here. But it was very accurate, this movie. And so,
well, obviously they actually went there and
And they laughed at him. They said, oh, this is not direction. This is not production that we want. Yeah, it's real combat, but they want, Americans want a story.
Yeah.
We don't want to just want to watch, some dirty Mexicans running around.
Sure.
He goes to the head of the Mutual Film Company. He's like, let's make a full six reel motion picture of this 2 hours long.
Like scripted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get costumes. We'll bring costumes down there. We'll have guys playing. Young Pancho Villa will build the story, and then we'll put the battle scenes in it as well. So they go down a second time to offer this once again to Pancho Villa.
And it's actually the smarter approach to make the battle scenes real, but then you gotta shoot everything else around. It's like reality TV. Come on, you gotta.
This is so bizarre. Yeah. I mean, it's really smart, but it's so bizarre.
It's a whole wag the dog type of thing. What, the tail's wagging the dog.
How have I never heard about this before?
There's a lot of history in
check
the world.
Check the movie out. The movie is really accurate.
It's not bad. I mean, it's an HBO movie.
So it's on HBO. If you have HBO Now or something like that, you just watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. Antonio Banderas is Pancho Villa.
I love Antonio Banderas.
Antonio
Banderas.
What?
Yeah. He's actually related to Pancho
Villa. When was the second one?
I thought we were still in 1912.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are. So he goes back a year later.
with Antonio Banderas.
I'm talking about they make a movie about this whole scenario, about the filming and everything.
Right, okay,
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, they
with
make
you,
a film.
Yeah, the original movie's not available on HBO. I don't think. Okay. Yeah, it's not on any streaming service. No. That's all gone.
It's like a film of the.
Yeah, a film of the whole thing. It's got
a biopic, if you will.
It's got some good guys. Jim Broadbent is in it.
I was wondering how Antonio Banderas is.
Sorry.
No, he is. Banderas is an ageless vampire, if you're wondering. We'll talk about that in another episode.
I'm obsessed. Like, he will never grow old.
He's actually related to Pancho Villa, Banderas. Really? That's why he took it.
Oh, really?
He is related to Villa.
Oh, good for him. So, that's great. But
does this movie have people like just actually getting shot, and they're like, here you go, guys, watch everyone die?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, America.
War footage, yeah.
Yeah, and then they and then the set... You know, a couple generations later, they tell you video games are too violent.
Yeah, right.
You are literally watching people die,
sure.
And you paid a dime to see it.
Yeah, I mean, you grow up reading the Bible, then what's a little bit of murder on the screen?
Exactly. So they got down there. The revolution's going fairly well for Villa.
Okay.
But there's still huge setbacks. They're not really winning as much as possible. The arms ban is over by Wilson, because ding ding ding, it's 1914,
World War I,
and we've got to make tons of ammo right now, because we're not about to go in just yet. We're the United States.
We have
other things to do.
We're gonna come in at the end and then have a hand in making you know, pistols.
A little hand. You rejected most of it.
Little hand. He only had little hands, little frail stick man.
And little, were you?
Little Woodrow Wilson hands.
I am not a fan of Woodrow Wilson.
No one is a fan of Woodrow Wilson.
But just for the sake of Americanism, I am going to jab at her a couple of times.
No, please do. You can do it on behalf of the failed Progressive Party and Teddy Roosevelt.
We tried to let you guys fight this war on your own, but then you started making those deals with Arabs and not deals with Arabs, and look what happened.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You can ask Balfour or McMahon Hussein, whichever one you want.
Nothing happened. It's just American propaganda. Uh-huh.
Yeah. You guys are doing well. You can just ask those Anzacs at Gallipoli how well you guys were doing.
Look, we all know the reason.
You always have to bring up Gallipoli, don't
you? Of course. Mel Gibson made a movie of it and everything.
Guys, look, it's facts, all right? Puerto Ricans became citizens. Then they threw all those Puerto Rican men into the American army. World War One ended very shortly thereafter. Right? If it wasn't for Puerto Rico, World War One would still be going today. It's a fact. Absolutely fact.
Just go with that.
It's
about as much of an ending to the First World War as you get. No. I like go with the one that everyone was just sick of being in a war.
Yep.
Everyone was just sick of it. No one could afford it anymore.
That's like the old, the South. The Civil War ended because the South ran out of bullets or something. Yeah, I mean, it was partially it, but you know, that's it. If we just had more bullets, they would have won.
No. But Mexico.
So World War One's happening. Mm-hmm. So things are getting all crazy.
World War One's fun.
And the problem is, Mexico's got a civil war going on in the middle of World War One, and Woodrow Wilson decides that it's not good to have an unstable government that any European country could infiltrate and used to the disadvantage of the United States.
Okay.
Have they at this point like put any of their troops on the border, like while all of this is going
on?
Build that wall.
And now it's time for the Roosevelt corollary, because Huerta is just way too disorganized for the likes of the United States.
The corollary, yes.
And so here they come in, General John Pershing and the United States Doughboys. Go in, work with Pancho Villa and Zapata, and clean up the Huerta mess.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oops.
Does he die during all this?
Who? Huerta?
Huerta.
Huerta actually does not die in this one. Not yet. He and Orozco, because Orozco had signed with Huerta, actually. He joined with Huerta because Huerta had finally given that position in the army that he always wanted.
Mm.
So they both head back to Texas and start planning their return to Mexico one day. And one of the things they try to do in return to Texas, trying to get more money and everything like that. So Orozco actually tries to steal cattle from a Texas rancher, and he gets shot, and that's the end of that.
Oh
no.
Yep.
I I just really hope we end before Pancho Villa gets shot. We know he's coming. I don't want him to die. He's so cool.
And dreamy. He looks like Antonio Banderas.
So we sit down in 1916, 1917, and we're writing a Constitution of Mexico to figure out what's going to happen. Zapata is there. Villa is there. Vistaliano Carranza is there. And Alvaro Obregón is there.
All right.
Where is Pancho Villa?
He's there.
He's there.
Okay.
Pancho Villa is there.
Sitting right next to Zapata.
This is where
Emilio Zapata.
Okay. And Zapata and Villa are a little bit too leftist for the likes of the aristocrats who are writing the Constitution.
Zapata wants that land back.
Man. He wants.
He's like, yo, the church took our land. We want it back.
Pancho and Zapata are really about putting this thing in the Constitution that takes everybody's land and divides it up evenly amongst all the people of Mexico.
Right, yeah.
Which the landowners are not.
No, really. They're like, no. We took this from you. We're keeping it. Like,
yeah.
No, we don't want that.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone is at least anti-Catholic church at this time, which is very nice.
That's the unifying thing.
So it splits Carranza and Obregón on one side, Zapata and Villa on another side. We have another revolution.
Oh, why can't we just get along?
Now fighting here? No. Yeah, but this time Woodrow Wilson really wants Carranza to win. Look, you have a constitution; you're stabilized. Hmm. So he starts sending more weapons to Carranza.
All right.
And
so that ban is lifted. Then whatever.
And Edison's General Electric Company, or at this time it's J.P. Morgan's General Electric Company. Mm-hmm. He stole it from Edison already.
Hey, that's my money. JP Morgan has my money.
It's in good hands.
Yeah, goddamn it.
They start bringing in spotlights. The first time spotlights are being used. So Pancho Villa can't do his nighttime raids anymore.
Whoa.
And so Pancho Villa decides, well, I guess I have to hop the border and kill some Americans in their warehouses so that they stop sending weapons to Carranza. So he goes across the border to Mexico and Arizona and he starts attacking Americans' outposts. And so now that's war on U.S. soil.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And was he not all there, like Pancho Villa? Was he not quite...
He was angry. Very angry. He felt betrayed.
Yeah, emotion led him as opposed to stratagem.
That's just stupid. Just stupid.
Just like a man.
So here comes General Blackjack Pershing again and his whole battalion. Mm-hmm. And this time his aide-de-camp, lieutenant at this time, Lieutenant George S. Patton, is right next to Pershing.
They made movies about that guy.
Yeah. That psychopath.
Yeah. Hey, the perfect American.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen the movie Patton, Rebecca?
No.
You should. You would love it. You'll love the way they portray General Montgomery.
Or will I just shout at the TV?
Both.
They basically...
Both. You'll love shouting at the TV.
I think you'll enjoy their portrayal of General Montgomery, because basically... they basically have him look like your husband with a high-pitched voice.
Aww.
And he's just so...
I have to watch it with him.
Yeah. Just, you know, with the mustache all the twirl of and everything, and just say, I propose we are going to land here. I'm the British villain here.
Just straight from central casting.
Right. He's just not like Skeletor.
And we shall be using my plan and not Patton's. Yeah, like it's this whole... Oh yeah, they drag him through the mud in that movie.
So Pancho Villa has made a grave error of judgment.
So we think.
Oh no, did he get away with it?
They can't find him.
Yes,
he's been a bandito for 20 years in the territory of Chihuahua. Nobody's giving him up.
He's the original. The original. We don't need no stinking badges.
And he's got planes going over. You know, Pershing's got planes going over. He's got cavalry. They can't find Pancho Villa. He's just hiding out.
Yay!
Yeah.
Go Pancho. I hope he's like still in the U.S. somewhere, just like hiding in the U.S. Like,
I mean, he's in Minnesota.
We have no idea where he was the entire time.
That's amazing.
He was just Pancho Villa was hiding, and to that point, by 1917, things are changing completely. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mexico gets a telegram at this time.
The entire country got a telegram.
Well, you know, Carranza gets one.
Oh, yeah.
Carranza gets a telegram. It's from this nice guy by the name of Zimmerman. He's a German foreign official.
Okay.
And he proposes that if Mexico attacks the United States to keep them out of World War I, they will, after they beat the British and the French, send the German army to help them and get Texas and California back for the Mexicans.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Oh, honey, sweetie, baby. Oh, no.
Trying to do a backdoor deal, get a lot of land.
Carranza knows where his bread is being buttered. And he's like, nope, not doing it.
Yeah, Monroe Doctrine.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, he's like, uh-uh. I'm not gonna go to war against the United States. Mm-hmm. British intelligence picks this up and passes it along to Washington, that note.
Don't blame the British.
And that's why the United States entered the war. Oh. Was it Canadians working?
Was it the Canadians?
So that's how we enter the war in 1917, because of the Zimmerman telegram.
Wow.
So Pershing's got to get out of there. He's got to go over to the war now, and we've got to do the American thing. In World War One, which is not use trenches, because trenches are for pansies, and we suffer the highest percentage of casualties than anyone else in that war.
Trench warfare is insane. I don't know why that started.
But Pershing thought he didn't need them, he thought. And that's why, percentage-wise, for the amount of time that we were there, we had the highest percentage of casualties, because that idiot was just like, run it, boys, football style.
Crazy.
Wait, we just stand in the open? Like, yo.
Yeah, we just ran. Yeah.
Run through dead man's... America. The dead man's land. Well, what's that, no man's land.
Well,
full of dead men.
All the white Americans did. Black Americans weren't allowed to associate, so they went with the French army.
Oh, well, yay. Good for them.
They hung out in the trenches.
Yeah, that's safer.
They come chill with us.
They were like glorified. The French loved them. They got medals of courage and everything. Most of them stayed in Paris afterwards. They're like, yeah, right.
Yeah, right. Why would they go back?
He's like,
I learned French.
I could stay in France, or I could go back to Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Yeah, where they hate me.
Yeah.
And don't even, yeah.
Yeah, where the only white tablecloth I see in France is on a table.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How did anyone fear us or anything if we're literally running to die while everyone's like bunkering down?
We
said
so many of us.
We're just like, look how many of those.
Because there is nobody that runs into shit better than we do.
I guess it's scary. I would be scared too, I guess.
If a bunch of crazy guys just were like, screaming and running at you as you gun them down. Like, they keep coming. Why won't they stop?
An average, the United States was sending about 10,000 new recruits a day.
Just to die.
Just to run out there.
To die.
It tipped the scales. It won the war.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Oh,
well. It's like that scene in the Matrix Revolutions where all the Sentinels, anyway.
You
gotta win somehow.
Yeah.
You gotta just
ram your
war
face
of attrition. Yeah. It's a very American strategy. Yeah. I'm just gonna punch it till it bleeds, bro.
Pretty much. That's as American as it gets. It'll die eventually.
Exactly. We'll get it. We got this. So back to Mexico. By now, Carranza has pretty much won the war. Mm-hmm. Pancho Villa's fizzling out. Zapata's still hiding. Pancho Villa signs a truce with them. He's like, all right, you know what? I'm done. You're done. We're all done. 1918, the war starts to die down, the Mexican Revolution. 1919 comes, and Obregón sends a delegation to kind of get Zapata out and talk about separation of lands and get him what he wants. And it's a trick, and he assassinates Zapata.
What? Zapata, no!
He's out.
That sucks.
Yep. Zapata. Carranza is not fulfilling the Constitution as he wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And so Obregón is going to overthrow him and assassinate him.
Oh,
Jesus.
Lordy, Lord.
This is such a mess.
Just people like in their homes. Everyone
just killing each other.
And now Obregón is Presidente of Mexico in 1920, which is the official end of the Mexican Revolution.
Wow.
Aftermath. Epilogue, you will.
Epilogue.
I don't want the epilogue because I think Pancho Villa is not going to make it through the epilogue.
He said everyone dies.
He did say everyone except Diaz died horrible deaths.
1923 and Pancho Villa is in one of his hometowns at a baptism for one of his soldiers, christening another godson. And he's happy. He dances with the people and everything like that. And then he gets in his car and drives home. He is stopped by at a four-way kind of intersection there.
Mm-hmm.
And as he stops, a man waves to him. And a bunch of people in Tommy guns come out and turn the car into Swiss cheese. And that is the end of Pancho Villa.
They Denzel Washington'd him.
Mm-hmm.
They Godfather Tollbooth'd him. James Constable.
He was being quiet and chilling.
He was just at a wedding.
And he was at Jesus' house.
He was. And then in 1928, with the last anti-Catholic law being passed, Obregón is assassinated by a Catholic fanatic.
By a Catholic fanatic?
Yep.
Oh my goodness.
And so the last of the revolution heroes is no more.
Oh man.
Now the film, The Life of General Villa, 2-hour reel, was a huge success in America.
Okay. And so that's the one where after they shot actual battle footage, but then went back and shot the fake stuff, the written stuff to put between. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it became huge. The film is lost to time because they didn't really keep films very well back then.
No way.
They had no idea how to store them.
Yeah.
So the film is lost. You can't find any footreel.
Not on Netflix.
Not on Netflix. No. Pancho Villa's grave was robbed, desecrated. He was not given a tomb by the other heroes of the revolution, by the government. They didn't like him. His head was stolen.
Oh, no.
What?
And it wasn't until the 1970s that the government of Mexico took whatever was left of Pancho Villa's body in that shallow grave, finally brought it to Mexico City, gave him a big funeral procession that he always wanted, and finally laid the rest of his body in a tomb honoring all the heroes of
the revolution. Wait, like the Mexican government officially did all that?
Finally in the 1970s.
Oh, who has the head, though?
Yeah, where is that at?
I really Where's hope
Antonio
it,
Banderas?
I
it's
with,
it's somewhere with it's somewhere with Rasputin's dick.
Yeah. Did that come up? I don't think we brought.
We didn't talk about the pickling.
We didn't bring up
talk about the penis.
Who shot him though?
The legendary.
We don't know. Some say it was the Americans. Some say it was the Mexicans.
Oh, just some random people.
People wanted.
It was the second government.
They were afraid of that kind of element surviving.
What if it was just random folks? They're like, who knows? What's that guy?
It was probably Americans. Americans can't. We do. Americans can't help meddling in Central and South American politics.
You hold a grudge as well. Like you, a grudge holder.
It's the worst. It's terrible.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. We're going to put the wheels down. Ooh, I get to do the...
You get to do it, yes.
Oh, my God, that sounds awful.
Is it right? I agree. Thank you. It's the worst. Pedro loves doing it. Dan's only doing it
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Bringing it down here. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of Devils in the Details. Follow Devils in the Details on Twitter and Instagram at The Devils Deets, DEETS. On Facebook, follow us at the PFT Media Group. Please rate us and review us on all Apple Podcasts. We have Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn.
Yes.
Email us at devilsinthedetailsshow@gmail.com. Give us a subject. You know, we're tired of thinking about ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, what do you want to learn about? Dan already knows it.
Give us
a
subject.
And if Dan doesn't,
Rebecca knows
it. Hell yeah.
So... Ladies and gentlemen, please follow all the big families as well. We got all our great shows. We've got Poking the Bear, Cinema Crespizzo, of course, our flagship, What's the Fuss, Scotch and Good Conversation, Simon Time Trivia, The Daily City, State of the Beer Union, Tidbits, and Lady Rat-tastic.
And also, we have a brand new show, The Major Scale, is our brand new music appreciation jazz show. New episodes every Wednesday, The Major Scale. Check that out.
And you can follow me at Dan P. Comedy, all me and my 100 followers, but more likely, you're going to have more fun following the Twitter I actually keep up, so please follow FSC Wrestling on Twitter or FSCW Entertainment on Instagram. Clara Sinclair, where can they find you?
You can find me, Clara Sinclair, on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
All right, and then Mike Monroe, can they follow you? You have social media.
I have those. I'm on Twitter at Big Mike Tech. I'm on Instagram as the word pro wrestling in Japanese. I don't even know how to say it.
Pearl.
Yeah, that stuff.
That's spelled like Pearl.
I stream D&D on the internet at Bulette Club on Twitch. And that's it. That's all I do.
All right.
That's my whole life.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been another great episode of Devils in the Details. And Big Dog, this one coming out to you. We're waiting on you, Beyonce.
Bitch.
A PFT Media production.